Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Elaine B. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today's date is Wednesday, September 9th, 2020, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book. And we are on page 4 of Bill's story, reading the third paragraph, which begins with, "We went to live." And we're going to read and comment on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Audrey M.P. for the 12 Steps, Rhonda R. for the 12 Traditions, Faye B., Pam M., and Lorraine N. Wendy B. will greet newcomers and get numbers from available sponsors at the end of the meeting, the recorded meeting, and Leslie M. will offer some announcements for us. The reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting is 15312. That's 15,312 for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting for September 8th. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting is 15322. That's 15,322 for the September 9th, 7 a.m. meeting. DOA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is the fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Yay! We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still recover, who still suffer, our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Audrey M.P. to please read the 12 steps. Star 1 to unmute, please, Audrey.
Thanks, Elaine B., and good morning, Team Tuesday. My name is Audrey M.P. I'm in California on the shore by the beach, where it's not so smoky, and these are the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Audrey M.P. Rhonda R., you're up next. Please go ahead.
Go ahead.
Please read the 12 steps, the 12 traditions for us. Thank you.
Sure. Good morning, Elaine. This is Rhonda R., grateful and recovered in Georgia. The 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And grateful to be of service today. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Rhonda R. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the direction recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what we read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, please let us know by saying pass and press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted using star 1, please. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in Bill's story on page 4, reading the third paragraph. And I will now ask Faye B. to please begin reading.
Good morning, fellows. This is Faye B., a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but today I'm in Milwaukee on my way to sunny Arizona. So from Bill's story, we went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as the result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. My wife began to work in a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. For me, Bill so expertly describes his journey. From his drive to arrive, to his impressive and considerable achievements, and then to his utter and dismal and horrible fall into the abyss. And it's in a way that I guess most of us involved with this program can relate to. I certainly know I can. For me, I just need to replace the alcohol he talks about consuming with a package of Oreos, bag of chips, and a tub of ice cream. But, you know, what is so meaningful to me here is the description of the progression of this disease and how it is so much more than just physical. Bill tells us, you know, about how he made it on Wall Street, living the high life. Then this horrible situation where he can't hold a job and has to move in with his wife's parents, becoming totally dependent on them and his poor, hardworking, loyal wife, all the while drunk and trying to be a hanger-on to the career, you know, his glory days or moments. I had that kind of drive to succeed. I constantly tried to improve myself while proving myself worthy. I excelled in lots of things, from school to a wonderful career in journalism. I arrived, but as I did, the food continued to spin out of control, taking, as Bill says just a little earlier, an ever more important and exhilarating part in my life. The truth is, I could never control food. It controlled me. I neglected family, friends, even my own body's needs. And I didn't experience the exact same low as Bill, but a similar one, until finally and thankfully that I found this program, this book with Bill's incredible story here and these meetings. The recovery is also so much more than physical for me. It is a new way of life, a way that both relieves the incessant and insane reliance on food and provides a spiritual path, a journey that is way much more fulfilling. Today, I'm much more engaged in helping others and in feeling as if I want to help others, that most of my trivial needs and wants are unimportant. I thank God and Bill for this every day. And with that, I will thank you for the opportunity to give service and pass.
Thank you so much, Faye B. Okay, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've already shared this week, we will ask that you would please hold off and share tomorrow. And who would like to comment on this passage? Star one to unmute,
yes,
please.
Kathleen
O. And did I hear
Julianne?
Julianne
G.
Julianne G. Thank you.
Sherry H. M.
Sherry H. M.
Malky G.
Malky G. Well, this is going so gently. Thank you. Anybody else like to share? Star one to unmute. We've got room for a couple more. Okay. Well, let's.
Oh, Paul L. from Florida.
Paul L.
Heather W.
And Heather W. Perfect. Thank you so much. All right. So here is our lineup: Kathleen O., Julia Ann G., Sherry H. M., Malky G., Paul L., and Heather W. Awesome. So Kathleen O., you're up first, and you'll be followed by Julia Ann G. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Smoky, California. So Bill goes from fortune to being broke in a relatively very short time. And I can relate to his thinking that if only he could get everything in order, his problems would be solved. There's a lot of ego and self-centeredness going on with Bill. You know, his inability to see the reality of his addiction. And he's got to the point where he had a lot of money and now he's living with the in-laws, unemployed. His wife is the breadwinner, coming home exhausted, to a drunk husband. So kudos to Lois for hanging in there, because I've kind of been in that situation. It's not an easy one to be in. So we see the progression of the disease with Bill, and the progression of a disease that destroys everything in its path. You know, Bill was a brilliant, intelligent, charismatic, he was accomplished, he was highly motivated, but he ends up broken drunk, and his life is totally destroyed by his drinking. So he has these God-given talents but they're destroyed by alcohol. And I think most of us are given God-given talents, maybe not all of those. And I think of musicians, the musicians who have this God-given talent of these amazing voices, and they succumb to drugs and alcohol and end up dead. You know, we're watching Bill spiral down to the depths of despair. And he goes on to have something, you know, some aha and light bulb moments, but it's really not enough, because this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And, you know, I can relate to that too. It's like, oh, okay, I have this figured out. I can figure out how to do this, but I never had it figured out. I would think I did. I'd have moments, but I didn't have it figured out, because it is cunning, baffling, and powerful. So ultimately, Bill ended up with a spiritual solution. That's where I ended up, and it was what worked. It worked for Bill, worked for thousands and thousands of people. And it works for many people on this line, and it can work for you. So with that, I pass. Thanks, Elaine.
That is so true. Thank you, Kathleen O. Okay, Julianne G., you're up next, followed by Sherry H. M.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julianne G., and I'm a compulsive overeater. And so what I can relate to is, like he talked about, or Bill, he got into like the drunken brawl. So I can just relate to, with my disease, things were about me, and I was frustrated with people because they weren't doing as I thought they should do. And, you know, I made some enemies. And, or, you know, with the friends I did have, I made the relationship kind of strained, you know. And if you hear noise, I have a puppy and another dog in the house. The other thing I can relate to, he didn't draw a sober breath for 5 years. Well, I got the opportunity to be home for several years, and at least maybe five, like home all the time. And, you know, my disease progressed with that. And I still was limited because, like, I wasn't the provider buying the food to some degree. But I also started trying to eat less, too, because I really isolated during that time. And then I just got to the point where I just was not happy with whatever I was eating. And I didn't know what full was. You know, and I also found out that I didn't have like a stopping point. I found out that I eat when I'm not hungry. But I didn't know what a portion was. When I try to control it, I just couldn't tell. So I'm grateful I have guidelines in my food plan in OA, and that's really helped. And a lot of that has to be with being honest with myself, and I'm honest with a sponsor. I text my food, but my higher power gave me the ability to be honest in general, because that is not something that, you know, in my disease I was able to do. Otherwise, I would have been abstinent on my own. And just glad we're reading this. I'm glad to be on the line, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Julianne G. Sherry H.M., you're up next, and you'll be followed by Malky G. Star 1 to unmute, please, Sherry.
This is Sherry H.M. from Washington State, recovered compulsive overeater and sugar addict. Well, I could really relate to Bill's sliding down the elevator shaft. Mine came in the form of, I used to be a competitive swimmer and different times jogged like 6 miles a day, not all at the same time. But anyway, then I went from that to being totally unable to walk, where I would have to roll off the couch and crawl on my knees to, you know, go down the hall to the restroom from ankylosing spondylitis and lupus. So I really hit the bottom with tons of medical bills, even though I had great jobs and overachiever and everything. Again, like Bill trying to prove, you know, to the world how amazing I am. But the amazing train is quite overrated, in my opinion. So, thankfully, I found this beautiful vision for you, big book study that changed my life. And 6 years ago, been, you know, working the steps, and am so very grateful to be abstinent for 6 years and food neutrality. As it says in this big book, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. So I am so grateful for all of you, and thank you. Have a blessed day.
Thank you very much, Sherry H.M. Melky G., you are up next, and you'll be followed by Paul L. Star one to unmute, please, Melky.
Yeah, hi, I'm here. Hi, good morning. It's Melky D. from New Jersey. And I always read Bill's story, and I always love it. I think it's such an exciting, exhilarating story, and I think I always loved it because I didn't really identify it. As I'm reading it, not that I'm identifying in, I'm starting to really see myself. But it's amazing that I couldn't see a year ago. The paragraph that jumped out to me was the line, sorry, is we went to live with my wife's parents. I can just say what, from the other side, I 3 years, I was always very independent. I was financially stable. I have 2 master's degrees plus higher educations. Always worked, self-supported myself, pretty much the breadwinner. My husband did not bring in an income. I never need to go to my family for anything, and I took a lot of pride. And then first thing that came is my health, and I couldn't take care of myself. I just worked harder, and my health started affecting me, and then my mental obsession was getting really, really to the place that I couldn't work, and 4 years ago, I stopped working, and I really was in a bad place. And 3 years ago was worse. My dad and family stepped in, and my dad bought me a house, and we moved to another state, and I lived near my parents and my siblings. And when this was going on, I was in such a desperate state, I couldn't think. But for 2 years after I moved, and I was living in a house that my dad paid with his own money, I crashed so badly. And I wonder if this is how Bill felt. I felt such shame and humility that I was running life on my own. And how did I end up at 40 years old living in a house that my dad owns and my siblings taking care of me as I'm trying to put the pieces together back to my life? And I'm feeling the pain that Bill didn't really accurately write in there. There's so much humility. But at the end of it, I had to work this program, because when the ego gets hit so badly, I had no other choice but working this program and turning to God, seeing things were not my fault. I had to own up to what was. But if there's shame and humility, then there was huge egos that I had to work through. And there was no greater feeling of knowing that it's all from a higher power, and I was able to connect to him and work through that ego. But peeling away of ego is hard, grueling, and painful. If I have another minute, the next paragraph, I found a job and lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. You know, I just kept climbing and climbing, and I didn't find a job. I had people seeking me because I was charismatic, and I had some good God-given work skills. But I never saw that side of me, that I was always brawling.
Gentle
I didn't
reminder.
See it. Okay, my time's up, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you very much, Melky G. Paul L., you are up next, and Heather W. will be after you. Then we'll take another lineup on page 4, paragraph 3, Bill's story, and that paragraph begins with, "We went to live." Okay, please go ahead, Paul.
Yes, hi, Paul. Grateful, recovering, overeater. And I just wanted to share about the hopelessness I heard in that reading, because I remember what it felt like. And I'm in another program, you know, in AA, and I remember what that hopelessness felt like. And I've been doing that deal for a long time now. And I, you know, it wasn't till at 46 years old, I hit a bottom with food. And obviously it wasn't, you know, I love how they put Bill's story in there because it's an extreme case. And a lot of people may not hit that bottom that he hit. And but with food, all I know is that it wasn't hurting me financially. Or maybe I spent too much money on it. I just remember the crying and talking to my spouse. You know, I prayed and prayed and prayed for God to remove it. And then the next thing I know is I'm in OA, and that was the answer to my prayer. It was not always doesn't always work out like you think it's going to. And then I realized I had to do some work, and I went through the steps with a sponsor. And gratefully, after being turned down many times for not being able to stay abstinent, she said, when you get through these steps and you start helping people, you'll get it. And she was right. She was absolutely right. Once I got through to the 12th step and I started helping other people, it went away. The obsession went away. And it's been 3 months now, and I wake up early. I have the life that I've always wanted, and I didn't realize how much food was preventing that from me with my self-esteem, even finances. Like, with the low self-esteem, being willing to realize that I am worthy of a good, successful life. And I'm so grateful that they put that story in there. I've read that a million times, and every time I hear it, I just remember how low it is possible to go, and that, you know, if I keep doing what I'm doing, there's a great chance that I'm going to be able to keep this. So I'm just really glad you guys are here. I don't get to as many meetings as I'd like to, but I'm here today, so thank you.
We're glad you're here, Paul. Thank you very much for your share. And Heather W., you are up next, and we'll take a lineup after Heather's share. Please go ahead.
Hey, y'all. This is Heather W., recovered here in Baltimore. Very grateful to be on the line. Haven't been able to call in for a while. And, this paragraph always gets me. Just when, you know, Bill writes, mercifully, no one could guess that I would have no real employment for 5 years or hardly draw a sober breath. I always share with my sponsees when we go through this, the delusions that our disease has us in, right? Bill is so delusional. And my guess is people could probably guess that he wasn't going to have a job for a while, that he wasn't going to draw a sober breath. You know, people could probably guess that, like, oh, something isn't going on. But it's just that idea of our disease, right, that people don't know, you know, or that people can't tell, or, you know, nobody sees what's going on. And I just think about that. And then when he talks about, you know, his wife coming home from working all day to be exhausted, I think about that, how when people left, that was my time to get down, right? That was my time with the food. When I'm home alone, oh, watch out. Because it's just straight, you know, me and the refrigerator and the cabinet back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then would try to hide the evidence, you know. And I think about, I came into program very young, when I was 21. Now, I had 6 years with step one experience because I didn't understand this physical allergy or the doctor's opinion. But, you know, I was young at home, binging alone over holidays, you know, because my family wasn't near. I was young at home, you know, living in Miami, people are gone, binging my brains out, sitting at home in my resentment, you know, instead of being out in life, enjoying things. So, yeah, this paragraph always just is a good reminder of the way I delude myself when I'm in my disease, you know, the delusions. Like it says, you know, we can't differentiate the true from the false. And how, wow, there was nothing scarier than me being alone. Because when I was alone with the food, there was absolutely no peace. You know, when other people were there, I could try to kind of fight it or hide it. But when I was alone, it was just time for me to go to town. And now the beautiful thing is, you know, for over 3 years, that's just the craziest thing, right? You know, I can be alone in my house and my husband can have whatever food is down there. It doesn't call to me. I don't want it. I'm not fighting it. I'm peaceful. I'm happy. I'm sane. And that's all because of these 12 steps and getting me in contact with God. So with that, I will pass. Thank you all for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Heather W. So, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've shared this week, please wait till tomorrow. But if you'd like to share, press star 1 to unmute.
Star 1 to H.
Linda
on
to H. Linda
Pam
P.
M.
Pam M.
Margaret M.
Joe G.
Margaret and Joe G.
Nancy L.
And Nancy L. That's maybe all we have time for today, so let's give it a try. So I've got Santa H, Linda P, Pam M, Mariette N, Joe G, and Nancy L. Please go ahead, Santa. You'll be followed by Linda P.
Good morning, my fellows. My name is Santa H. I'm from the Recovered Compulsive Overeater calling in from New Jersey. Now, when I get to this part of the book, I feel so sorry for Bill, but I know that this is what he had to go through in order to reach his bottom. And and I had to go through my own experiences to reach my bottom. I was on my own, living in another state, far from my family, and married and breadwinner of the family, and was living a good life, and said I would never come back to New Jersey until all hell broke loose in my marriage and got divorced and had to come home and live with family. And at the time, just like Bill, I didn't know there was a solution. I just knew there was something wrong with me. And I recall, you know, my relatives couldn't get along with me. I was stealing food. I was binging all the time. I was looking for places where I could find food at in the community, sneaking out at night, going to places to get food. And not even knowing that I was a compulsive overeater at that time. And I, you know, it got so bad that I had to leave. The fighting and bickering between my family and I had to leave. And so, you know, being in disease is no fun. It really causes, it doesn't just affect me, but it affects everyone that's around me. And this is what Bill is showing. You know, this disease is not just affecting him, but it's affecting everyone around him. Unfortunately, it's going to have to get worse before it gets better for him. So I'm just grateful to be called into these rooms by my higher power. Didn't know what I was looking for when I came here, but got what I needed. And I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful for all the great shares today with that I pass.
Thank you so much, Santa H. Linda P., you're up next. You'll be followed by Pam M. Please go ahead, Linda.
Hi, this is Linda P., recovered compulsive overeater from Kingston, New York. And, wow, I really, really identified with how I think he must have felt. Totally, you know, humiliated, especially coming from such a kind of a big ego and that whole drive to win and succeed. And I had that too. And it took bring down of my ego down to that bottom. And unfortunately, that's a very painful, you know, place to be. And it doesn't, you know, I didn't let that change me overnight, but to the program, I was thinking of how he must have felt with, you know, not being able, you know, being at his wife's parents. And I remember someone on some podcast sharing that it wasn't such a, you know, his parents did not have great high regard for Bill, as you might suspect. And being in a, I'm just imagining, you know, how they must have looked at him throughout the day drunk, you know, seeing that their daughter is working so hard. And the memory that I remember is moving, like 1 year, moving 12 times from one place to another and ending up, you know, getting in fights and, you know, just having these terrible experiences. I had moved to try to be geographic, to try to make myself feel better, to go back where my home was, to be by the ocean. And I ended up in a hotel. And thinking, how the hell did I get here? You know, what happened? And remembering, too, that at that time, I remember being at my sister-in-law's house, and she accidentally came into the bathroom while I was taking a shower and saw my body, you know, naked, and just looked horrified. And I just remember the absolute shame and not being able to understand why I was in that situation and why I looked and felt the way I did. And it took many more years before I actually came in the rooms, but thank God, you know, that there is a solution and I don't have to live that way anymore. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you very much, Linda P. Pam M., you're up next and you'll be followed by Mariette N.
Blessed morning, everyone. This is Pam Medina, upstate New York. Oh, I'm sorry, Pam M. Anyway,
A lot of what Linda said too, what stands out for me is we went to, I found a job and I lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. And as I reflect on how I relate to Bill, I just recall fighting with everyone and everything. And, if I wanted to identify in with Bill, I would say that he was probably in really deep depths of self-pity. And because that's where I was in a terrible state of self-pity. And everybody else was wrong and life freaking stunk. And I was angry at the whole world because this is how life was and this is how everybody treated me. And I was, and I was depressed and I didn't realize that this self-pity, this depression was actually a form of selfishness. And I was unable to recognize other people's needs, other people's feelings, and that my choice to wallow in my self-pity and depression was impacting everyone around me. So getting sober off the food lifted my illusion of innocence because I truly thought I was a good person. I was a spiritual person. I wasn't hurting anyone. And why are you doing this to me? Why is everybody hurting me? Why is life hurting me? But when I got off the food, it did. It lifted this veil and I started to become awake. And working the steps helped me to repair my past and the damage and the way that I hurt people when I was wallowing in my self-pity and in my disease. And now I live happily and free of depression. And, I'm not perfect. Sometimes that self-pity still creeps up. And thank God there is a step 10 because I can work that step 10. I can do that inventory. I can turn it around and I have this incredible fellowship to reach out and help me get back to the divine reality. So thank you so much. Have a blessed day and I pass.
Thank you very much, Pam M. Marguerite N., you're up next and you'll be followed by Joe G.
Good morning, everybody. This is Margaret N. And I've been recovered for 77 days, one day at a time, in Loomis, California, and it is smoky. I just want to thank everyone on this line, from the moderator on down, to every last person listening. And what strikes me about this paragraph is it's the beginning of his true bottom. And for me, there's a lot of hope in that. Ego has to be demolished. My ego had to be destroyed. And it wasn't until I had curled up in a fetal ball and started waving the white flag 77 days ago that the last little bit of the part of my ego that felt like it could control things was I gave it up because I knew I couldn't. And then the compulsion was lifted. It was the most amazing thing. But here's Bill, and here's the beginning. I mean, he's got nothing. He's had to move in with his wife's parents who hate him. He wasn't even around when she almost died, when she was hemorrhaging, I believe, from childbirth or a miscarriage. And they hate him. And Lois somehow sees something in him that she knows is there, even though it's buried under the layers of ego and the bottles of liquor. And so for me now, when I read this, it's a hopeful paragraph because it is the destruction of ego. And that's, I know for me, that's exactly what it took. So thank you so much for this meeting. It keeps reminding me that my ego doesn't know what's best for me. And you know, the more I access, the more wide open that channel to a divine presence in my life is sought and is, it's not me really doing anything. It's me sitting back and letting it flow into me. It's made all the difference in the world in my life. So thank you so much. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Margaret. And thank you very much. Joji, you're up next, and you'll be followed by Nancy L. Star one to unmute, please, Joe. Joe G, star one to unmute,
okay.
Please.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I thought I was already unmuted. Great. Okay, so, yeah, good topic. I like topic is... as I understand it, hitting bottom, and it's a very good topic for me. I'm in several fellowships and have had difficulties with a number of different addictive behaviors and substances. And unfortunately for me, in a way, I guess, fortunately and unfortunately, I'm such a control freak that I'm able to, sorry about that noise back there. That I don't hit bottom in spectacular ways. I'm kind of an introvert and quiet, fearful person, controlled, and so I guess maybe it saves my life because I don't hit bottom to such an extent that I die like some people do. But it kind of works against me because I can limp along in sort of a gray zone for years and years. Sort of one foot out the door and one foot in the door of recovery until I finally hit some kind of bottom. But it's almost like it never looks bad enough on the outside, or at least on the inside to me, it doesn't look bad enough to warrant action. And around just so that's happened in several different areas of my life where I just kind of had to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. For this one, you know, it could be fatal. I have high cholesterol. I have a warning about diabetes, a pre-diabetes warning around my blood sugar. And that's why I'm trying to get real serious about this program. And I'm having some success. I've made a major change around probably the worst trigger food I have. And that's, I got about 2 weeks on that. And I'm super grateful, really grateful for all the OA meetings that there are. You seem to have, we in OA seem to have more telephone meetings than any other fellowship that I can see anyway. And they're like 24/7, and I really, really appreciate that. And just by tuning into the meetings and listening to the message, things are definitely getting better, so I'm grateful for that. And hopefully I won't have to hit some really massive bottom, like actually having the consequences of high cholesterol or the consequences of high blood sugar, and that this can get better even as I age. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joji. Okay, Nancy L., you're up next, and I think we'll have time for maybe one or even two, no, maybe one more share after that. Please go ahead, Nancy L.
Good morning. This is Nancy L. in Georgia. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can, loud and clear.
Okay. I just thank everyone that has shared this morning. It's like I'm sitting here listening to This Is Your Life, Nancy L., because I'm just, the human condition is amazing, how we're all so different and yet we're so much alike with this disease. I hear Bill and I hear him, his pain in that paragraph, because I had to go through that pain, spend some time with, I thought, others hurting me, and I was pitiful, and da-da-da, they shouldn't have done this, and they shouldn't have done that, and everything would be okay, but I couldn't see what I was doing and how I was hurting myself. So it took this program, and it's taken me a long time in this program. But today, I have 8 months that I have not sit down and poked food down my gut, and hours and hours of binge eating. But it's been 8 months since I've done something like that, and I can only thank my higher power and the tools and the people in this program. So for everybody who shared today, how I thank you and how grateful I am, for those of you who are doing service to keep this meeting online, my heart is full of gratitude to you. I've been in the OA program for 6 years, but I do not have 6 years of clean, abstinent eating. But today, I don't regret all those things that I walked through. After I found OA, I thought maybe this has worked for a lot of people, but I don't believe it'll work for me. But there were a couple of things that just stuck in my mind. It was keep coming back. It works if you work it. And I thought, okay, I can do that. I can keep coming back. And another thing was to stay around until the miracle happens. And so those two things, I hung around my OA program. I might go home after an OA meeting and binge for 2 hours. But somehow, with the grace of God, I would come back to another meeting. And I've kept coming back, even though I've relapsed several times. But I keep believing that the miracle is happening, and I'll keep coming back. And I thank you again. So with that, I pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Nancy Al. We do have time for one more share, if anybody would like to share in that third paragraph on page 4.
Patty T.
Please go ahead, Patty.
Oh, great. Thank you, Elaine, for your service. And gosh, this has been such an amazing meeting. You know, when I look at this paragraph, I look back at my life, okay, because I started in the food so early. And, you know, hardly draw a sober breath. I don't think I drew a sober breath from the time I was 5 years old until I was 51. Honestly, possibly during some of those fad diets I was on, but no. And then it says my wife began coming home to find exhausted to find me drunk. I can remember incurring my mother's wrath and rage when she would come home after working 2 jobs and I had not done my household chores, which basically were making a bed, maybe sweeping up the kitchen and putting washing and putting the dishes away. That's all I had to do. But and she would call me lazy, but the fact is I wasn't lazy. I was into my fantasy. I was inebriated on onion sandwiches with mayonnaise on white bread and bowls of cereal with sugar in them and, you know, all kinds of whatever I could find to keep me out of the present. I was drunk, absolutely drunk. And then I became an unwelcome hanger-on in places. You know, I can remember going to friends' homes and just sitting there, either eating from whatever their chip bowl was or smoking incessantly and really not contributing anything to the visit other than just to watch, because that's how I lived. I lived vicariously through others and in my head. And today, you know, when I came to these rooms at 51, I had no idea and really expected it never to work. If therapy didn't work, well, whatever. But you know what? I have learned to become honest in this program, and I want to make this clear, I am still learning to become honest. Every day I realize one more rationalization I have made, and and somebody, I heard somebody on this meeting on one of these lines call rationalize means rational lies. And oh my goodness, that really stuck with me. That, you know what, I get to see my truth, good or bad, because I know today that I don't have to change it. I have a higher power, and I have all of you. And you guys teach me how to be honest each and every day, and for that I am so grateful. So thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Patty P., for closing us out. And thank you, everybody who has shared and came and listened. We're now going to transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will PMM please read a vision for you?
Absolutely. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the route of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.